Good morning. We're up to the fourth chapter, the 21st Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar HaKapar Omer. I don't know what the word kapar means.
It's an Arab word.
What?
It's an Arab word now. I think nowadays it's an Arab word.
Okay.
Kapar, like kapara.
No, it's with
like,
a kuf.
Like, nowadays, like, it's the Hebrew sling. It means like beloved one or something. I think something like that.
הקנאה והתאווה והכבוד מוציאים את האדם מן העולם. הקנאה, jealousy, תאווה, desire, כבוד, honor, they remove a person from the world. Explain שבן יונה. פירוש, מעניין הקנאה יש שני דברים שבהם שניים שלושה עניינים ואין בהם לרוע. When we speak about jealousy, so then it breaks down to a few different types. Part of which are not bad, and others are bad. הדרך האחד מקנה בטובה, והוא הדרך רע. מעניין הראשון. So he says, one is a person who's jealous of good, and it's a bad jealousy of good, and כי יראה חברו טוב ורע בעיניו. If he sees his friend who's a good guy, and he feels bad that his friend is good, וכאשר עוסק בתורה ומצוות הולך בדרך טובה מקנה בו. And if he sees someone dealing in Torah or mitzvos, he's going down a good path, and he feels jealous of him in a bad way, כי הוא שונא אוהבי השם ועושה רצונו. It bothers him that other people are doing what's right. That's a type of jealousy that's destructive. המידה הזאת מוציאתו מן העולם. So that's a type of jealousy where he sees what's good and it annoys him. Well, that is destructive to a person. That's the worst type of jealousy. That's what's referred to as those that hate Hashem. When a person sees other people doing what's right and it bothers them, so that's when we say that's jealousy that is destructive, that destroys a person's life. העניין השני, לא יראה בעיניו מצד כיסוני דרך עוסק בתורה. Second type of jealousy is a person who he doesn't hate other people just because they deal in Torah. אך אחר שאיננו הולך בדרך אי, לא חפץ גם בחברו שילך בה. So he feels like, I don't do that, why should you do that? I don't keep Shabbos, why should you keep Shabbos? כי אם לפי רצונו לא ימצא אחר טוב ממנו, לא מטובתו, מרעת האחרים. So that's the second type of destructive jealousy, where a person says, I don't want other people to be better than me. So then a person says, I don't want other people to do more mitzvos than me, to daven better than me. I don't want anyone to be better than me. So then whenever he sees other people, even his friends, doing more mitzvot or doing things better than him, so then he also isn't pleased with that. גם זה יקרא שונא השם. That's also called someone who hates Hashem. כי אינו עושה מעשה השם, גם מחבריו העושים קשה בעיניו. It's not that, not only doesn't the person himself fulfill his duties, but he's bothered when his friends do. ואם איננו שונא כראשון, even though he's not as bad as the first one, but this is also destructive. You'd be surprised how often this comes up. This really comes up. I see it all the time. Saying that people don't want other people to be better than them. They don't want other people to be better than them in mitzvot, in Torah, in tefillah. We're all God-fearing people. Why should you be better than me? This is also destructive.
It should be the opposite. We should be jealous on our friends and they are higher, that we also would like to reach this level.
In theory, I think I told the story last week about that nurse that got upset. No? Not here. Okay. What? there was a nurse who was responsible for helping my grandfather, and when I saw that the bedposts were metal, and that when my grandfather turned over in bed, he could hurt himself banging against the posts, so I came and wrapped up the posts with foam. So there was a nurse that started yelling at me. And I said to her, "Why are you yelling at me?" And what I understood at the end was she was yelling at me because it wasn't her idea. Because she felt like she should make sure that the bed is the best bed for her patient. And if someone else was going to do something, 5 minutes later she came and did what I had done initially. But she, it had to be her doing it. If so she's yelling at me because...
She put on your pads and she put on...
Yeah. Yeah. I went out and bought styrofoam, a foam mattress, cut it up, wrapped up all the bedposts, and she started yelling, "No, the zip ties you're using aren't good." She went and brought her bandages and cut off all of my zip ties, and she had to wrap it with her bandages. Now it's good. So even though she had a point, it's better to wrap it with bandages. There's definitely an advantage to the way she did it, but I stood there just in shock, like, why is she yelling at me? What's bothering her? And what became evident over time in dealing with this nurse was that what bothered her was it had to be her who was doing the mitzvah. It had to be her. What?
Is it mitzvah or is the action?
Okay, let's give her the benefit of the doubt. Let's call it the mitzvah. But that's still not the way we're supposed to perform mitzvahs. Our goal has to be that the mitzvah is performed the best possible way. It's not about me versus you. It's about let's get the job done right. It's not a personal issue. It's not an ego issue. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying the second type of jealousy is where a person feels threatened. Other people shouldn't be better than me. And then they're bothered when someone else is doing a mitzvah because... Why is he doing a mitzvah that I'm not? So if that drives a person that they themselves should do a mitzvah, that's one thing. But if that drives a person to say, I don't want you to do that mitzvah, so that's also a jealousy that's destructive. But, says Rabbeinu Yonah, just as in the destructive type of jealousy, there are two types of jealousy, so too there is productive jealousy, and there too it breaks down to two types of productive jealousy. Mashamu Chazal, the sages tell us in Tractate Baba Basra, Kinat Soferim Tarbe Chochmah. The jealousy between rabbis, between people who are learned, will make them be smarter. There's a jealousy that's very productive. A person sees his friends who are holy, he sees his friends who are wise, and he says, hey, if they could do that, why can't I do that? I want to do that too. So that drives a person to growth. Out of jealousy, a person becomes smarter. He works harder. And then it causes him to go on a straighter path.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
It's an awesome thing that you just said, is because there's like, I think a very important part of Judaism is using theoretically the bad traits of the human, you know, things that we consider bad, to use it for good. Like, it's human nature. Like, I'm sure, like, the way we read these art school books about, you know, the biggest religion here, when they die, is that they're a perfect person from day one. And like, there's an effort now to dispel that more. And you can see, like, for example, like, there's a certain rabbi, like, he was a sore loser. And he was a sore loser. That's because you consider that a bad thing, right? But that's possibly how he, one of the ways he became so great is because he didn't want to lose it. He just kept, you know, trying and doing well, good what he had. And this is, like, similar, I think it's, like, kind of what it's saying. He's saying that, you know, if a person's jealous, it's a good thing.
So he's saying it. So long as the jealousy is not that he doesn't want others to succeed, but rather that drives him to succeed. And this is part of where we are very affected by the environment we're in. If you daven in a shul, where most of the shul shows up 5-10 minutes late, then if you show up 2 minutes late, then you'll feel good. If you daven in a shul where 10 minutes before davening, most of the shul is already there, so then you're going to want to show up at least 10 minutes before davening. These things affect us. That too, but says Rabbeinu Yonah, and again I learned in Merkaz Arav. So in Merkaz Arav, when you showed up at 6 in the morning, there were already tens of guys learning an hour before davening. When you showed up at 5 in the morning, there were already tens of guys there. There's almost, in my day, there almost wasn't a time that you didn't have people in the Beit Midrash. At 12:30 at night, you still had the people learning from the day before. And at 1:02 in the morning, you had the people who were already getting up to start the next day's learning. So you almost didn't have time that the Beit Midrash was empty. Well, that drives a person to learn. After Merkaz Arav, I went to another yeshiva where a lot of the people didn't live locally. The people would come into yeshiva at 9:30 in the morning because they had to travel a distance. They were married people, they would take care of their kids. And then after they daven, took care of their kids, took a train, they'd show up to yeshiva at 9 o'clock or 9:30 in the morning. So suddenly, when I came to that yeshiva, if I would show up to yeshiva at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'd feel like I'm great. I'm here an hour before everyone else. Compare that to Merkaz Arav, where at 6 in the morning, you feel like a slouch because you're walking into a Beit Midrash, which is already with a bunch of people learning. So we are affected. It drives us. Seeing other people drives us to our own learning. You should try to choose a shul where you're not the top. We try to choose an environment that will drive us to growth. At the end of the day, it affects us. When I see across the street from me that there's, 15, 20 kids that show up an hour before davening on Friday to learn with their parents. How many people can learn with their parents an hour before davening on Friday? You'll see that most homes, 2 minutes after Shabbos, it's still hectic, let alone an hour before Shabbos. But when you see 15, 20 other families that succeed in getting there an hour before Shabbos to learn, it drives you. It tells you, hey, there's room for growth. That's a jealousy, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's positive. When it drives us to growth. Rabbeinu Yonah says, it is nonetheless better if a person can reach that growth without being jealous of others. Because at the end of the day, man has to try to grow within positive traits. And jealousy, even though it can be used to harness our own growth, nonetheless, it's not part of the pleasant paths of Hashem. It's a trait that can be used for growth, and it's not one of the pleasant ways of Hashem. That is what King Solomon said in Ecclesiastes. I see all that people work. I see how people try to get their actions right. That very often the reason people can get it right is because they're jealous of the next guy. My neighbor learns a full Seder without picking up his head from the Gemara. So I'm going to try to learn a full Seder without picking up my head from the Gemara. Well, Gamzeh Hevel Urut Ruach. Shlomo Amar says that is also not the greatest thing in the world. That's also destructive. If the reason that drives us is being jealous of the next guy, it's still not the most positive. Because if we can get ourselves to do what's right, simply because we drive ourselves to do what's right, that's the true and whole path of the service of Hashem. And it is always better if we can drive ourselves without being jealous of other people. V'tov asher techos barishon mizal tanach yadecha, says Rabbeinu Yonah. But as human beings, we have to be aware that we will act based on both. Sometimes we can drive ourselves, and sometimes we're not going to drive ourselves. Sometimes the drive is only going to be seeing other people. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, the ideal is that I can drive myself without seeing other people and saying I want to be like that, and yet you're going to need both. You're not always going to be able to drive yourself. You do need that. And that's why it's important to choose a good environment. When we choose where we bring up our kids, where we daven, where we learn, we should try to choose places where we're not the top. Places that will help pull us up. That we will have that drive of seeing others. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Kutar. I daven in a Haredi shul when I grew. And if I see the people davening, also the children, and if there are some parts of the tefillah that are not common, that I don't say every day, and I see them davening, and I do all my utmost best to keep up, and I can't succeed. Sometimes I start crying because it is something, you know, that the feeling I'm never going to succeed.
The principle we're going to discuss now is one which applies, I think, to all of a person's avodat Hashem. It is easy to understand conceptually, yet a little bit hard to connect to. The more a person can connect to it truthfully, the more a person can grow with tranquility. And the concept, in one sentence, is I only have to do what I have to do. And I'll explain. Ten days ago, I was spending my day and night next to my grandfather's hospital bed. And it drove me crazy because I was missing the first classes of the semester with you guys. I was missing a lot of other responsibilities I had. And I was doing a mitzvah which I thought I had to do at the time. And after that period of time was over, I looked back and I asked myself, what am I supposed to learn from that period? I kept trying to block out of my mind the thoughts of what I was missing here and what I was missing at home. I have a lot of responsibilities which I was not dealing with at the time. And I thought about it for a long time, and I realized the point which we're going to see right now. Mordechai visited his niece or his wife, Esther, every day. Mordechai was a big tzaddik. Mordechai was one of the chief rabbis of Israel. I'm sure that Mordechai would have preferred to be learning or teaching during the hours it took to travel to the king's palace, to visit Esther, to travel back. I am sure that if Mordechai was asked, would you like to travel to the harem every day to see how Esther's doing? Mordechai would have said, maybe we'll send someone else. I would much rather learn. I am on the highest court of the Jewish people. I have a lot of responsibilities. But Mordechai goes every day to check out how his niece is doing because he knows that what he can give his niece, no one else can give her. He can give her strength that no one else can. His poor niece, the orphan, gets a strength from his visit, and she's all alone in the harem. So Mordechai shows up every day for years to see how Esther's doing. How does Mordechai do that? About 20 years ago, I was in Rabbi Feinstein's yeshiva, and there were mitzvos I had to deal with, and I wanted to learn. So I went to the head of the kollel, and I said, what am I supposed to do? I'm trying to learn. I need the time to learn. And yet, there are instances that come up where I have to help so-and-so, and I have to help the other guy, and I end up losing hours of the learning, and I don't see what I'm supposed to do. So he said to me the following principle. He said, we're working within the system of the Torah. Within the system of the Torah, we are taught a rule that mitzvah she'ifshal asot al de'acharim, if it's a mitzvah that other people can't accomplish, you have to stop your learning and deal with it, right? So at that point, you're doing what's right. It's not about, let me get in X amount of information this day, this week, this month, this year. It's about, let me utilize my time correctly within the confines of halacha. When I can learn, I'm supposed to learn. When I'm supposed to do a different mitzvah, I'm supposed to do that mitzvah. You'll say, but I lost that time from my learning. Well, maybe their bon shalom will give you another year to your life to make up for that time, and then you'll accomplish that. Maybe if you were supposed to live till 190, now you'll live till 120, so you can make up that time. We don't know God's calculations. What we do know is the system. And within that system, I have to work correctly. And the point I'm trying to make is, when I work correctly, I have to be at peace with it. If I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing at this time, then I have to realize that the thought, well, what about this mitzvah or that mitzvah, or this accomplishment, that accomplishment within Torah that I'd like to accomplish, that's also Yetzer Hara. That's also a wrong perspective. Right now my goal is this. Right now I'm supposed to be doing this. So I should be very happy that I'm doing this. I'm doing good. I would have a preference that's my preference. But what does Hashem want of me? Well, if this is my mitzvah now, so that's what Hashem wants of me right now. So now I have to have an inner peace. This idea that we define goals for ourselves, and then we get frustrated if we didn't reach them. We compare ourselves to other people. Rabbein Yonah says sometimes that's what helps us grow, but it's not the ideal growth, because the ideal growth should be, I look at what Hashem wants me to do this day, this hour, and if I'm doing it, then I'm happy. And that's what drives me to do. And at the end of the day, that's what also gives me a sense of satisfaction. The idea that I compare myself to others, well, I don't have their skills, I don't have their challenges. So that I don't have a right to compare myself to others, and that goes both ways. That goes by looking up the ladder. When I look at other people and I say, I'm not accomplishing what they are, well, I don't have the abilities they have. Or looking down the ladder, I'm not supposed to look down at people because I don't have the challenges they have. We're all different. The question is, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing at this hour? And if I am, then part of my avodat Hashem should be an inner peace, where I'm at peace with myself. I'm telling you something that I worked on, I'm still working on myself. But I think that it affects every aspect of our avodat Hashem. Meaning, after I left my grandfather, I started thinking, I said, What am I supposed to learn from all of this? And then I thought about Mordechai. I said, how did Mordechai do it? I'm sure that Mordechai had a much harder time going every morning. And then I said to myself, no, Mordechai probably did not have a harder time. Because Mordechai probably was at peace with himself. He said, this is my mitzvah now. This is what I'm supposed to be doing now. So let me put on a big smile because I'm doing what's right. I'm happy. I personally might prefer something else. So what? What difference does that make? And again, I think that affects every aspect of our avodat Hashem. When a person goes to sleep at night, he can feel at peace. He's going to sleep. He's not wasting time. He's utilizing time. He's supposed to go to sleep at night. I'm saying in everything we do, this can give us an inner peace. What we do accomplish, what we don't accomplish.
I'm with you.
Actually, what I found very useful, not necessarily
davening, but remember, like, I work a lot of times listen to music, at the Mitzvah, obviously, but, and because of that, I know a lot of, like, what sort of exotic, Sephardi songs, which I have no business knowing, because I'm, like, you know, like, purebred Ashkenaz. But, because of that, like, I'm able to remember a lot of songs, so I'm sure there's tons of recordings on YouTube. You just listen to it, not even while you're working, and you can memorize things like that. That's, I find very, very, very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I only came and listened to the last part of what you said and started speaking about the subject of the importance of what to look for, what kind of people to surround yourself with, looking for a community to live in, to raise your children in, and that part of that should be to be around people that are at a higher level and certain mitzvot or learning Torah than you are in order to aspire to be like them. I want to know if there, in addition to that, you know, part of the calculation, what is the balance between surrounding yourself by people who you aspire to be more like them in terms of their strengths, but also, you know, to not put yourself in an environment where you feel, you know, so either so not necessarily so much lower, but to the point where it's not such an organic mix to where it feels claustrophobic in such a community where you don't necessarily fit in, or your family doesn't really fit in with everyone, despite the fact that you might appreciate their higher level in certain Torah and mitzvot, and then what's the balance that we're supposed to look for in having the aspiration aspect, and, you know, surrounding ourselves by people who we aspire to develop their strengths, but also that where we keep the, I guess, the organicness or the right chemical bonds within the community, so that it's not it's not water and oil, it's water and salt.
I think a person has to live in a community that they feel they connect to. They feel they're a part of. Like you're saying, it's not water and oil. When we choose a community, it has to be within a range that I feel like I'm a part of that. Within that range, I shouldn't be the top, but I shouldn't be separate. I have to be a part of what I'm seeing. Once I'm a part, so then I should choose a community that within that range, the set I'm choosing from, is communities that I connect to. Yeah.
How do you go about even searching for such a community, especially those of us coming from the Homier usually tend to be on the different side, but then those communities that are filled with many people that are so different sometimes might be to such an extreme degree where that too doesn't have its proper possibility for balance.
That's for a Thursday night.
I also come from the Homier background, and I as you walk in the Palais, in the beginning it was difficult, but if you feel that you're part of it, then people accept you. Eventually, it's an
Thursday night. Haderech Hashniya Kinat Osher. The second thing, so Rabbeinu Yonah said, jealousy breaks down into two types of jealousy. The first one was jealousy of good. So he said within the jealousy of good, there's a person who says, I don't like people who are do-gooders. That's terrible, says the Rabbeinu Yonah. Then there's a person who says, I don't like anyone who does better than me. That's also bad, says Rabbeinu Yonah. Then there's a person who says, if people are doing better than me, I also want to do good. That, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is a tool we use in our own growth. That when we see others doing good, we try to emulate, we try to catch up, so to speak. He says it's not the ideal way of doing mitzvos, But it's nonetheless a tool that we generally also tap into in our own growth. Next is jealousy in the realm of wealth. העניין הראשון, השוחר הרע וקשה בעיניו כי ישו של אחרים, אחר שאין לו. So the first type of jealousy in wealth is a person who finds it difficult that other people are more wealthy than he. ואין בכל אלה כזו לרוע כי שונא טובת הנבראים. There's none who are as evil as that, says Rabbeinu Yonah, because he hates when God's creatures have it good. ואינו רוצה בתיקון העולם. He does not want the world to have it good. He just doesn't like it when other people have it good. There are people like that. That, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is a terrible trait. That's a trait a person has to really remove from himself if he finds himself with that. העניין השני, second type of jealousy is המקנה בחבריו העשירים וקשה בעיניו כשהם עשירים ממנו. Where a person looks at his friends and he is jealous when his friends are more wealthy than he. לא משנאתו בהם ובראשם ויחפוץ שיתמעט. It's not like the first type of jealousy where he wants them to have less. אך מאהבתו לעושר וחפצו להיות עשיר גדול. But rather, he likes wealth. He wants to be very wealthy. כי העושר בעיניו הוא הכבוד ורוצה להיות נכבד מהם. Because in his eyes, wealth equals honor. And he wants more honor than them. That's the second type of jealousy. Where a person says, I want what others have. Now, on some level, I think that's a regular part of every person. Every person, to some level, wants to have what he feels everyone else has. There's a norm in society. If once upon a time, everyone owned one shirt and one pants, so you felt very comfortable owning one shirt and one pants. Once you look around in society and you see that other people have 5 or 10 shirts, you start feeling like you want that too. Because you want to feel like you have what everyone else has. There's a baseline that everyone wants to feel they're a part of. And that baseline changes based on the time we live in, based on the society we live in. And then there's the society a person chooses to live within. Meaning if you live in a community where everyone goes to Bermuda in the summer with their family, then you start feeling like I'm not like everyone else. If I don't go to Bermuda, it could be that out of your society, out of the people, your friends, that's not the norm. But within the friends we choose, there are social norms. This is part of what we have to think about when we choose where we bring up our kids. Society has norms. What do you get for Afikoman? If all the kids on the block have, what do they call that? Free-flying mazlat. What? Drones, right? Yeah, it sounds funny, but what? You bring up your kids where other kids have kites, your kids are going to want kites. You bring up your kids where other kids have drones, your kids are going to want drones. I thought about this because a parent told me that they went on Shlichut to Tel Aviv. There was someone. So in Tel Aviv, they said they didn't have a school to send to. This is someone from the Jerusalem. So they sent to the Hasidish school. So they said in the neighborhood where they were shlichim, there wasn't any observant school other than the Hasidish school. They said we spent 3 years in Tel Aviv, and our kids went to Hasidish schools. When Pesach came around, our kids asked for Sfarim, because in Tel Aviv, they saw the people who we were trying to be Mekarif, we were trying to teach them what Torah was, but they didn't feel like that was them. They felt like those are the people we're here to help. Who did they associate with? With, I think it was the Bells school. The Hasidish kids in school, they were going to. So even though at home they wore Kippah Shrugah, when they went to school, I guess they must have worn a yarmulke like the kids in the Hasidish school. That the parents said to me, it was an amazing thing to see. So long as we were in Jerusalem and kids had kids who were like them growing up, so whenever Pesach came around, we'd get requests that were all about a drone or things like that. Once we moved to Tel Aviv, so the kids' perspectives changed, and they started asking for Sfarim for their Afikoman. Because that was the environment they were in the school. We are affected by that. So that, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is the second type of jealousy. We're affected by what we see around us. A Ger Chassid, when I was growing up, told me the following story. In Chutz Arts, he said, you come on Rosh Hashanah to Shul, you bring your Shabbos talis, and you're fine. He went to Eretz Yisrael, he went to the Ger Shul in Eretz Yisrael, and his relative took him in and showed him around, and after a few minutes he said to him, I can see you're from Chutz Arts. So he said, what do you mean? He said, look around the shul, you're the only one who has an old talis. Everyone here bought a new talis in honor of the new year, the new Yamim Tovim. Look around, everyone's talis is stark white but you. Okay? That's the norm, I guess, in the Ger Shul, in Eretz Yisrael. So on a certain level, if you live in that society, you're going to feel like you're supposed to have a new talis, or at least your talis is supposed to be real white. And Rosh Hashanah, dry clean, yeah? Vainyana shlishi. There's a third type of jealousy, says Rabbeinu Yonah. Hu atov bareim ohev kesef umkanebo v'chafet shiyelo osher gadol v'im nachim yeshmaat o arbe lo yechush v'en laze kina boeret kmo hafet zit asher mikol bnei adam. He says the best of the lot when it comes to money is a person whose jealousy is not about others. All he wants is more and more for himself. Rabbeinu Yonah says that's also a type of jealousy. He's not so worried about what others have, but he does constantly want more for himself.
How is that jealousy?
So what we're seeing from Rabbeinu Yonah is that he's looking at the word kin'ah as desire, not the way we would translate it as jealousy. King Solomon speaks about all of these and says, "Al yekane libecha b'chatayim ki mirat Hashem kol hayom." Don't spend your day desiring different things that are off the mark. Your desire throughout the day should be about your level of being a God fearing person. Peresh tchila kina ra'a shelo yekane barshayim b'osei averot lasot kmotam. Shlomo Amelech says, "Don't be jealous of people who transgress." Person says, I want to do like them. Sometimes we tell ourselves there's nothing wrong if I'm jealous of people who are doing things that are wrong. And that's not true. You spend your time being jealous of people that are doing things that are inappropriate or wrong, you're really guiding yourself down that path. Very often the first step is how we view that. Meaning a guy could be sitting in yeshiva. He could be spending his day learning and davening. But in his mind, he thinks to himself, I'm jealous of all those people that have a good time. I'm Ben Yehuda. If that's what he's thinking, he is allowing his yetzer to keep gnawing at him. He might end up there. Our approach often reflects our attitude. And our attitude is what drives us ultimately. When a person says, I'm jealous of the people that can learn 10 hours a day, then slowly he's headed in the direction of learning 10 hours a day. When he can, he'll add 15 minutes here, 20 minutes there. Before he knows it, he'll have an hour a day of learning. He'll keep growing. When a person keeps thinking, I'm jealous of the people that lead a hedonistic lifestyle, so even if he hasn't taken any action, the fact that he channels his thoughts, his energies, and he has that approach to things that are wrong, well, he's already put himself on a path in that direction. So Shlomo Amel says, "Ali kane libcha b'chatayim." Don't be jealous of people who transgress. Sometimes you can read an article about someone that did something terrible, and deep down inside, the thought is, he must have had a really good time. And our sages say that that's a step in the wrong direction. Shlomo Amel says, "Al yekaneli becha b'chatayim." Your heart should not be jealous of those who transgress. That's something to work on. How do I view it? How do I look at that? One rabbi once told me, his father was a very stoic person. He didn't say too much. He lost his whole family in the Holocaust. And then he had a second marriage, which was, in his mind, just a way of continuing life. And then he had kids from that second marriage, and he took care of them and brought them up, but he didn't say too much. So this rabbi told me, he said, there weren't a lot of things my father told me. He said, he fed the family and sent us to a good day school. And he was our dad, but that was the extent of it. He said, one thing I remember. We were once walking down the street on our way to shul on Shabbos, and we saw someone transgressing Shabbos. We saw a Jew who was not keeping Shabbos. So I said to my father, I said, you see that Jew? He's opening his store on Shabbos. So my father kept walking to shul, and he just muttered a comment, something to the effect of, what a pity, what a fool. And just kept walking to shul. He said to me, till today, my perspective when I see a Jew who doesn't keep Shabbos is that one line my father said as we were on the way to shul. What a pity, what a fool. My father didn't say much, but I could see the contempt with which he looked at the guy, and he thought, like, what a pitiful person. I feel bad for him. He doesn't have Shabbos. And my father kept walking to shul. He didn't think too much about that sentence. But he framed my perspective on how do I look at someone who does not have the blessing of Shabbos. So we for ourselves, our attitude ultimately affects how we do it. That's what Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, that people who gave up everything in order to keep Shabbos suddenly found their children not keeping Shabbos, because when they would keep Shabbos, they would come home Friday afternoon and say, it's so hard to be Jewish. The attitude they taught their kids is, the neighbor who doesn't keep Shabbos, he has it easy. That approach, says Rabbeinu Yonah, to be jealous of the one who transgresses, that's destructive to us. Yeah.
Kind of put perspective, because it gets tricky. That person who taught his child that Shabbos, this poor miskei doesn't, you know, but the people who don't value what they have enough, because you can't say the person eating the bacon cheeseburger, it's no good, it doesn't taste good. Yeah, it tastes good, but you're giving up a lot by doing the same thing with the guy who goes to the beach. You shouldn't be going to in Tel Aviv. It's not like it's not fun. It's just the price you pay for that takes away from the relationship that's Kaddish that you're going to have with the woman you're allowed to see. But that's where it gets tricky. Because if you just cut it on value what you have, you just look at it as sort of a stuck in this approach, right? You're right. You won't hold when you get the chance. That's important, I think, to be able to make that differential. You can't say that on some level these things are pleasurable.
No one's saying they're not pleasurable.
He wasn't with the story, with the example of the story. He wasn't saying, like, how pitiful he's, like, he's making money. Like, making money is, like, important.
The person who's jealous isn't saying, I'm jealous because the guy is working hard. I'm jealous because, you know, I got to marry off my kid and I don't have the money, and it would be nice to have the money. And but yet, he said, but I'm giving up too much more to do that, I think. And I'm just trying to weigh this in my head, because it's almost impossible to pretend that something has no pleasure in it when it does.
But why is that so relevant?
Well, because to say only negative, contempt, you know, as this guy is such a loser, it assumes that everybody's on this very high level where they can, you know, experience Shabbos in such a way where it wouldn't even be a temptation. And I don't know if that's real.
No, that's what
I don't know.
Describing.
Okay.
You're just describing on a very simple level, okay. Like Chabad is, you know, Chabad, this guy is, you know, confused or
okay.
Stuck
okay.
In a mentality where he doesn't have so if you think about it, having Shabbat is very simple. That's where the concept of the weekend comes from. It's where the concept of, all right, you know, so we can look at it, you know, right now in the modern world, shut our cell phone, shut all this,
okay.
And experience how nice it is, and then even more so as religious Jews, being able to appreciate the spirituality of it. But at the end of the day, it's a break, it's a day
it's,
of rest.
There are many different levels of appreciate Shabbat, and there is a certain level where one would never be tempted to break it, I can't imagine. And then there is, you know, maybe I'm not at that level. Maybe there's a level where there are times it's a mixed bag, and, you know, people can take plenty of breaks and relax and, you know, fix their TV Shabbat, you know, without, you know, you wipe yourself out.
Aspects of discipline in keeping yourself
appreciated, you
thoughts.
Know, this obviously is not
that's
a problem for anyone else here.
It's a whole other discussion.
Okay,
that's probably it. Right. Even if it's not for Shabbat, you know,
right.
You know, every everyone has that.
Yeah. He got away with cheating on his taxes, that poor sucker. What a mistake. We're just going to draw the line.
There's a certain point for everyone.
I don't want to belabor it. It's not fair to you guys. It's honestly the sort of trouble.
I think
you
might cheat
taxes. It doesn't count. You can't be jealous of that.
Well, if we're jealous, that means you can get away with it.
In other words, you know, I'm talking about a fair government. Remember, history of people live with you as much as a cat. No, we don't do that. But,
okay, I'll answer you, and I don't know if my answer will help you. Two weeks ago. So me and a relative were working all day, taking shifts, taking care of my grandfather, and there was an aide, a lady who is a very devout Christian. She'd sit there praying, and this other person who was with me, we were taking turns, so He was sitting with my grandfather, and I davened, and then I sat, and he davened, and then one of us, I don't remember, said the blessing, Asher bochar banu mikol ha'amim, Hashem chose us from all the nations, v'natananu et torato. So this other person said to me, half jokingly, he said to me, did he have to choose us?
Someone else would choose.
He said, So I didn't say a word initially. And then he looked at me and he says, did he have to choose us? Why do we, the Jewish people, have to suffer so much? What do you have to choose us for? So I said to him, you know, it's interesting you're saying that today. Because today, it was Sunday, I guess, the aide has off. And she's going to church. She's going to spend those 3-4 hours off going to church. I said to him, "I just sitting here doing what we're doing, me, you, her, has really driven home the point to me, Asher Bachar Banu. We're so fortunate because she is doing something very similar to what we are doing. But she is going to go to church today. And at the end of her 120... she's going to look back and say, oh my gosh, here I thought I was doing everything great and I invested so much time and energy and money, and there were some things I did right, but there were a lot of things I was just on the wrong path. I said to him, today, the older I get, the easier it is for me to say that blessing with such happiness, because Hashem gave us value. He made everything we're doing worthwhile. On the contrary, I have a hard time understanding how Hashem didn't choose the rest of the planet. How Hashem allows millions of people to live lives which, at the end of the day, what are they going to have to say for themselves?
It's exceeding very
well. I walked through the airport. And this isn't Israel. All around me there are restaurants and people eating, and it's not kosher. And I looked around and I said, I'm the lone Jew walking through here. And there are thousands of people around me eating cheeseburgers and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, but they're going to reach 120. And what will they have to say for themselves? When I eat something, I make a bracha. Even my eating is part of a mitzvah. It's part of leading a lifestyle the way God told me to. What I eat, what I don't eat. When I eat, when I don't eat. Everything is a system that's right. And if I look around, I feel bad. I have a very hard time. Whenever I leave Israel, I have to again work through the concept of why did God create most of the world not Jewish? Why create billions of people who lead lives where ultimately they're going to look back at it and say, I didn't do that much. Meaning a person lives 70 years, So he ate. He's like a machine. You put in, you put out. You put in, you put out. What'd you accomplish? So he brought kids to the world. So he did some ethical things. I'm not saying, but most of his life, what was he doing? And I'm walking around the airport looking around me and thinking, isn't it a pity? Why did God do this? I have a hard time with that.
It's a great Thursday night class. You know, the idea that you had built just doesn't work. It's not enough.
I'm saying it's a very difficult concept, and I spend the time walking through the airport reviewing what Rambam writes, reviewing the idea that Gemara and Brachos tells us, and trying to come to terms with why did God give people life who will ultimately look back and say, I didn't do that much with that life.
The expectations were obviously less. I mean, if you have a kid...
No, that's not what Rambam writes. But no, that's not what Rambam writes. So that's a Thursday night. I'm saying there are opinions among the Rishonim. I'm just saying, so you're asking about... When I do what's right in filing taxes or in keeping Shabbat, am I jealous of the other person? I'm not jealous. No, on the contrary.
Right. I'm not saying, you know, that it's great if one's at the level where there's never. You know, someone, God forbid, has a terrible marriage, and the next guy, you know, has his, you know, beautiful marriage or whatever, or, you know, or the idea of these things, and to say, hey, this is what was given to me. Shem loves me. My purpose in life, to say that that's not a struggle and that there's not going to be elements and times where people, that's a level to aspire to, I agree. I just to make it like it's such a given is great. One can do it.
I think we have to work on the appreciation of what we really have.
Yeah.
I think and not because I have a greater pleasure, but because I get to do what's right.
And that is the greater pleasure, that level. Though
in the long,
I'd much rather be a noble, sane person who has a perspective of Shep, would much rather be with as right than a Hollywood star or whatever nonsense people are throwing.
Right.
I get it. But to live with that all the time.
So I think, but that comes back to the Asher Bachar Bono. It's a perspective on everything.
In Brachot, were you talking about seeing a non-Jewish cemetery?
No.
Because there it talks very negatively.
Right.
So it seemed like the billions.
I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about what it says, that Adam had to work so hard before he could have one garment, till he planted, till he harvested, till he worked the... till he made one string, till he made one garment. We live in a world where you have billions of people doing a lot of things, so that everything we have, so much work went into, and it's so easy for us to buy. Think about the shirt you're wearing. Who made the button? Who made the strings for the button? Who made the fabric? There's a lot of work that went into it. Who shipped it here? There's a whole world out there working. So they're working to quote-unquote get ahead. And the perspective the Gemara and Brachos gives us is Hashem saying, you guys are serving me. I'm going to create a world all around you that's very busy getting ahead. But their getting ahead is going to facilitate you being able to be my servants. So that's hard for me to walk through the airport and think, all these people, they're all working so hard and they lead lives. And then they're going to look back after they're 120 and say, so what was the point? What was the point? Because I developed the Dell laptop, so they were able to write Chidushei Torah on the Dell laptop.
That's
no small thing. If that's what your role was, you're saying it's.
I'm saying it's. I have a hard time with that.
I understand what he's saying. I mean, that's a great way. I think I understand.
It's frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, you walk down a plane, you look to your left, you look to your right, everyone's busy doing something, and you think to yourself, they're wasting their time. They're developing society, but it's like everyone in an army where everyone could be generals, everyone could develop the atomic bomb, but everyone's busy just taking a little gun, running around and saying, I'm going to protect the country.
Again, they sound racist or something. The recruiter says it's a shark doing the wrong thing because it bites on the fish and eats it and it doesn't go out and do greater things. That's what it's in this world to do.
Okay. So to me, that's frustrating to see a human being who has potential like me and yet is busy in the rat race instead of...
But they need a role so that Jew, Am Yisrael, can spend most of their time learning.
Okay, so that's Rambam. Rambam makes everything into a pyramid. Most of the world is playing a supportive role for people who are higher up on the pyramid.
It's better to play a supportive role well than to be the guy who
gives
the
fire and blows
it. But it's frustrating.
It sounds like most of the world. I was reading last night that there were the Jews were kicked out 109 times since the destruction of the Second Temple. It seems like they're doing more bad than good.
That's the Gemara of Avodah Zarah.
We have cheap shirts, but like. Most in terms of the
sales are doing more good than bad right now. It's, I think the same too. I hope so. Yes. But, am I doing more bad than good? I hope not. But
that's what Linus Shabbat is all about, right? So we say, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Coming back to Rabbeinu Yonah, where he said we shouldn't be jealous of transgressors. So, that's why Shlomo HaMelech ends and says we should be jealous of those who have fear of heaven. Where a person should have drive is just as a person can have drive to collect more money. And there, Shlomo HaMelech says, that is not the drive that will help a person grow. To spend one's life thinking, I want more and more, that's not positive. But where should one have a drive to constantly grow? That's Be'irat Hashem. When it comes to the fear of heaven, there a person should have a drive to grow. That's where a person shouldn't feel like I've accomplished enough, I'm where I should be. No, it can still grow.
Nice music for us to get up and dance. We're all...